You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Gary Vaughn and Randy Isbell.
Hello and welcome to another Football to Football. And man, this season is really starting to it's pretty much on down to the wire with one game that doesn't matter and the big Super Bowl in a couple of weeks. And we just got to talk about these championship games, and then we're fishing for stuff to talk about on these shows, really. But I mean, it's been a couple of days. How's everybody's weekend go?
Oh, good, man. You know, just kind of getting things ready for, you know, everything we've been doing podcasting wise. Of course, me and Sean did a big wrestling podcast last night for the Royal Rumble. Of course, getting ready for this coming week, you know, enjoying those games this weekend. So I just been, man, sportsed out, to be honest with you.
How about you, Randy?
Yeah, who would have thought, you know, I do two football podcasts a week and I watch wrestling about once a month anymore, and the only thing I got right on Sunday was the Royal Rumble winner.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, I mean, I think they stumped me on a couple of them. I think we all got Kalisto. That's about it.
Yeah.
On a lot of that. So, but hey, you know, things happen in there, so at least that'll keep us going where, you know, the football season is starting to end. But, I mean, we did have two big games to talk about, one that kind of lived up to its hype, and the other one that was a total plastering of the other team, something that we did not expect to happen at all, considering the way, I mean, Arizona maybe wasn't going in looking the best. But you still figured, okay, it's a championship game. They're going to do what they've done all season. And then here come the Carolina Panthers, and that defense shows up and forces seven turnovers, six of them committed by Carson Palmer. Some of them really bad throws. Just absolutely insane that once again for another. And there were parts where it looked like they might be able to overcome, but then other plays happen. That third and two, that Larry Fitzgerald doesn't make the catch, the Patrick Peterson fumble, those I think also changed because that's been something that they've had to deal with, you know, overcoming Carson Palmer making mistakes. I think it's just, this was kind of a game where he just made one too many.
Or two, or three, or four. This was like you said, this was a weird game because I think we all talked about it, thinking it was going to be a close game. I thought Arizona matched up really well with Carolina and was going to give that defense a little bit of trouble. And it's just one of those cases where a game gets away from you and they were just unable to get things going. Listen, give full credit to the Carolina offense. I know the praise mostly is going to go to the defense for the seven turnovers and how they completely just shut down Arizona in the second half on any chance they wanted to come back. But Carolina goes out, scores 17 points in their first three drives of the game, jump out to a 17-0 lead, and really made Carson Palmer, you know, have to start forcing it. And then the defense was very opportunistic. They were jumping routes. They were they were completely playing mind games with Carson Palmer, knowing that he was going to have to force it down the field, and took advantage. And, you know, to give a little bit of benefit of the doubt for Carson Palmer, his finger is still not 100%. So that goes a little bit. And as receivers were having a rough day, Larry Fitzgerald dropped two easy catches, in my opinion, that really kind of continued the momentum going Carolina's way. And unlike, you know, last week when we were talking about how Carolina jumped out to a big lead and then kind of coasted, they did anything but. I mean, they went out there and just stomped all over them in the second half. Arizona scores a touchdown and goes for two and makes it. Carolina goes down, scores a touchdown, and they decide to go for two for some reason. And I understand that pissed a lot of people off when they're up by 25. But I just think that was them saying, listen, we know we took the foot off the gas last week against Seattle. Absolutely no way we're doing it this week. So full credit to both sides of the Carolina. They completely dominated this game from start to finish.
You know, this game turned out completely the opposite of what I talked about last week, and you know, Randy just kind of pointed out we were really giving Arizona's defense a lot of credit. Overall, the offense a lot of credit, and that's where we were pointing. We kept thinking, well, I mean, it's going to be very difficult with the Carolina Panthers banged up secondary to cover Larry Fitzgerald and the rest of these great receivers that the Arizona Cardinals have. It just didn't work out that way at all. Carson Palmer was the guy they had to stop, and they did it effectively, and it was almost too easy at times. Carson Palmer helped them as much as they hurt him. So, I mean, it just really was dumbfounding at times to sit here and say, wow, this is a team that I really thought could do something, at least keep up. And it just didn't end up that way. And really, the kicker is I think I motivated Ted Ginn. Ted Ginn was very effective in this game. Rushed for a, like, 22-yard touchdown and, you know, made some great catches in this game. And I really felt like he was the one guy that, you know, you could point to and say, eh, he just is not effective in the playoffs. Well, yeah, I was completely wrong about that one. So it was just a complete domination for the Carolina Panthers. You got to be happy for their fans. I mean, this is something special. You saw the greatest show on turf in St. Louis when they had that going. They loved it. They enjoyed it. It's nice to see fans happy. But, you know, if you're an Arizona Cardinals fan, you are really bummed out because your team really had the reins of this whole conference. Let's be honest. You really did. Besides the Carolina Panthers, there was nobody else that was really matching up with you. And the Cardinals are just not the team. The Panthers obviously are.
And what do you make of after the game, Bruce Arians was like, I'm not putting this on Carson Palmer. I'm putting this on and there was nothing wrong with his damn thumb and all this other stuff. You think Bruce Arians is kind of covering a little bit, even though he kind of knows who you're putting this on? Or
no, because I'm kind of with him. I don't put this on Carson Palmer. Listen, again, Carolina came out and punched him in the face. That offense was unstoppable to start the game. And when you go down 17-0 in the first quarter, your game plan changes, and you start forcing things. Sometimes it's going to work out in your favor, and you can start moving the ball down the field. Sometimes you're going to get picked off. Maybe Carolina saw something in the tape where Palmer was really kind of giving away where he was going to go, and they baited him into some stuff. I mean, listen, you go back, and the stats look terrible. He throws four interceptions, only 235 yards. But, I mean, if you look at the bigger picture, he threw three of those interceptions when the game was basically over. I mean, he just it finished it off. It turned it from Carolina dominating the game to a complete blowout. So you kind of throw the stats out the window for Carson Palmer. I know a lot of people are giving him a lot of flack today just because of the numbers. But I think even if Carson Palmer goes out there, throws 350 yards, gets a couple touchdowns, only throws one pick, I still don't think Arizona wins this game.
Yeah, you're right there, Randy. And the one thing is, you know, I have to give Palmer some of the blame here, but not completely all of it. That offensive line that I said had to be better this game, and there's no way they could play any worse than they did against the Packers. Completely wrong on that. You got to give credit to the Panthers as well, but it amazes me. An offensive line that just looked really great all year long, just really worked hard, all of a sudden they got exposed, and maybe it's something in the tape. maybe it's some thing going on that we don't know about with some of those guys in the O-line. But it just – it amazed me how little they really did to help Carson Palmer in this game. The very few times did he have a lot of time to sit there and look around.
Yeah, and speaking of offensive lines, how great was Carolina's? I mean, especially after we saw what Denver did to Tom Brady in the first game. Arizona hit Cam Newton twice the entire game. It wasn't like they were sitting there and doing three-yard slants. I mean, Cam Newton sat back and could read a book on some plays before just throwing it down 30, 40 yards to a Corey Brown. I mean, he had all day to just pick and choose what he wanted, and then he made the right decisions. It was just a complete team effort, and Carolina showed exactly why they were 15-1 this year and why that you cannot overlook them the rest of the year or at the Super Bowl or next year. Because you guys remember, they're still doing this without their best receiver. They've done this all year without Kevin Benjamin, and he's coming back next year, so they're even scarier next year.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, in the Super Bowl, they won't even be as strong as they were in this game, losing a defensive player. And I'm sure have a few more injuries to add to that list. You know, usually guys don't come out of these games clean, but, you know, they do have 2 weeks to prepare, get healthy. But still, at some point, you know, it does make you concerned. But they've overcome everything, overcome the injuries in the secondary, it seems like. And I mean, this team is just dominant. They're terrifying. Right now, you know, 2 weeks before we really get to that big game, if I'm Denver, I'm really nervous. I'm really concerned, and I'm having to think about what I need to do to find a way to win.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, there was other things that – I mean, Cam Newton was just great in this game. You know, 335 yards, only had to make 28, you know, throws. I mean, the Corey Brown one to me, I think, was the one that really – when you're down 17-0 and all you had to do was make that tackle, you don't, and he goes all the way. Another one, you know, this is why I think, you know, Randy's a little bit right when you say you can't blame it all on Carson Palmer because – I mean, the where they don't make the tackle on the reverse for Ted Ginn where he gets it in the end zone, I mean, that's on the defense. Carson Palmer didn't play on that play. And, you know, the guy that didn't make the tackle on Corey Brown, that's on him. You know, Patrick Peterson made that big fumble on the punt return where he's just not looking or he's thinking about running and not making sure he has the ball. I mean, that hurts you too. I mean, you could have made a big difference there. You try to... You get things going, and maybe the offense kind of changes. They're able to make better plays. I mean, you're right in the sense that there was a part where Carson Palmer couldn't think about being smart anymore because he had to just score. And, you know, and also the biggest one, and this one is on Carson Palmer, that interception he throws in the end zone at the end of the first half, that was huge. They would have scored there. That's a different game. Going into the second half, you know, you're making Carolina think about, oh, hey, we might blow it again. Hey, we got to be on our game. It gives the defense new life and everything. But when you're down, what was it, like 24-7 instead of a possible like 24-14, and it's a 10-point game going in halftime, that's a much different game there. So, you know, and then there's just stuff in the second half as well. I mean, David Johnson was the only guy that really had a good game for the Cardinals, honestly. You know, he was vital on some run plays and everything, so I think you're not worried about him, but just Arizona just was not themselves, and this is where you give a lot of credit to the Cardinals or Panthers offense, but the Panthers defense should be given the same amount of credit. Kurt Coleman picking off those interceptions. Luke Kuechly had the pick six there at the end, and he was great all game. Just Quan Short was great. I mean, just that whole team just turned on a great performance. It was everything Carolina in that game, honestly. So, I mean, and Gary's right. I mean, if you look at what, you know, we'll go ahead and transition to the other game. You look at what Denver did. And, I mean, they didn't put up anything impressive. I mean, you're scoring 20 points, and you're hoping your defense. And there was so many times, and I mean, I'm sitting here going in the fourth quarter, I'm like, how many times are you going to give Tom Brady an opportunity to end the game for you? how many times. All they had to do was get one first down. The game would have been over. They couldn't even do that. I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's a really big deal when you're playing a team like the Panthers defense. You know, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say so. And the big thing to me is, you know, you're looking at, you know, the fact that, you know, Tom Brady, you know, he's been really, you know, able to get away from some pressure here and there in the game. Got sacked four times, but at the point,
he was hit 20 times more than any other quarterback in any game this season, which is crazy.
It is very crazy, and it shows how good that defense is. But at the same point, it shows how lackluster that offense is at times, and that concerns me because, you know, Tom Brady was able to do it, but Peyton Manning just doesn't seem like he has a Tom Brady way about him where he can get away with things and he can make things happen when he needs to. They just had to get that first down, like you said, Sean. Great point, and it just – I don't know how they couldn't figure out how to get a first down. It scares me to death that if I was a Broncos fan. I know our good friend Paul has to be a little worried because – you would think with a guy that's had as much experience as Peyton Manning has, with the receivers they have, because I still think the receivers are pretty good. They haven't really been the receivers they were. I still think those names on the back of the jerseys have kind of lost their luster this year, but they still got that talent. They got running backs that can get, you know, on the outside and gain yardage, and they couldn't do anything, nothing to get a first down. Either they're too comfortable or they can't figure it out. I don't know.
And what do you think, Rennie?
Yeah, this game was really interesting to me because I went into it like just figuring New England was going to win this game. I figured, you know, the only way Denver could do it is if the pressure that they put on Tom Brady was just too much, and it really was. But the way Denver's offense played in the first half was surprising. Like, they actually moved the ball down the field. Peyton Manning looked okay. But it was the second half that looked exactly how I thought the game was going to go. Right. Denver could do nothing on offense, but their defense was stifling the Patriots enough to really cause enough havoc and not let them score touchdowns. And, you know, say what you will about should they have kicked the field goal at certain points with like 6 minutes to go or not. You know, they felt like against this defense, I mean, you're now close to the end zone. You got to go for it. And I totally understood what Bill Belichick was going for. But the second half was kind of what I expected in this game. It was just, you know, Denver did enough on offense in the first half to give them that lead that's all that defense needs. I mean, we're going to be sitting here the next 2 weeks talking about Denver and Carolina and trying to break this down. And I know a lot of people are going to give Denver absolutely no chance other than it would be the amazing story if Peyton Manning wins the Super Bowl and retires and does the John Elway and all that. But like, if they broke it down, they'd go, no, Carolina's going to blow it out. This is the exact kind of game that Denver will need to play in 2 weeks. Keep it close, bring as much havoc as they can towards Cam Newton, get him off rhythm, and just keep themselves in the game because as the game goes along, if, say, Denver has even a three-point lead going into the fourth quarter, like, you got to love Denver's chances because it's that defense that you rely on. And it kind of showed against New England. They fell behind in the first half and just could not overcome that defense.
Yeah, and I think the big point here is the difference is going to be, you know, Tom Brady, he can move a little bit. He can move enough, but he's not Cam Newton. You know, Cam Newton's going to move around. He's going to run up there. He's going to – that's a lot different for you to have to deal with if you're Cam Newton or if you're – or, I mean, if you're the Denver defense. I mean, that's something you got to pay attention to big time. And that takes away a little bit of what you want to do. I mean, you got Brandon Marshall and Danny Trevathan. You can do the job, but – I mean, having somebody spy him the whole time, that's somebody that takes away on the coverage. I mean, and that's where I think the receivers are really going to be tested, you know, to go against the two defenders that the Broncos have and, you know, Aqib Talib and Harris. And if they're going to be able to kind of keep them down, is this the game that's finally going to show not having a Kelvin Benjamin or whatever – if that makes the difference, you know, or if they're going to be able to stop the running game, which that's another thing, you know, the Patriots had no running game, and it showed as well. They had no way to take the pressure off of Tom Brady. I mean, it's just Steven Jackson's just, he's too slow. I mean, that guy should not be playing anymore. I have no idea why the Patriots signed him again. It just, I mean, he's a great like goal line back, I guess, but it, I mean, at that point, who knows? I still have to give, you know, the Patriots a lot of credit. I mean, Brady just finding Gronk on a 4th and 10, ridiculous, you know, making plays and just, oh, it was amazing to me. They still got the touchdown, and it came down to that 2-point conversion that would have tied the game, and you never know. The way the Broncos are playing, you get into that overtime, the Patriots could have won very easily.
Definitely. So. I think so, too, and I think the momentum that the Patriots had going, I for sure think they would have won, especially if they got the ball first. You know, and you're talking about the running game, Sean. You make a great point here in this game. I mean, look at the score and the way the game turned out, and the New England Patriots had no running game. That's going to be different when they face the Carolina Panthers. You know, they've got guys.
They're all about the running game.
Tolbert. Yeah. They got Cam Newton. So, I mean, it's all effective all the time. And so that's a big concern, you know, just because the pass rush is going to have to deal with that. They're going to have to decide when they're going to pass rush, when they've got to kind of hold back a little bit and make sure they stop the run. They've got a lot of decisions to make on that defense. Wade Phillips is going to have his hands full completely when it comes to game planning for this game. But, you know, you made a point about the New England Patriots and the fact that, you know, they got like Steven Jackson, a guy with a lot of experience, just not very good. And that was a very good test. I mean, my God, I think the reason the Patriots got Steven Jackson was so he could afford his hover round. I'm just saying that. So that's, you know, one of the things I think they really got to consider when they go into this game, that, man, you know, we didn't have to worry about a running game last game. What are we going to do now?
Yeah. And Gary brought up Wade Phillips, and I think that's going to be the key for the Super Bowl is what Wade Phillips can come up with. Because, yes, Tom Brady is nowhere near as mobile as Cam Newton, but Tom Brady technically is supposed to have seen every kind of defense there is. He's the one that, you know, he can see a defense and go, okay,
I don't think that Tom Brady, that offensive line was terrible.
Well, that's terrible, but he was confused as to where it was coming from. You go back and watch some of those plays, and Tom Brady was like taking a step forward like he was afraid there was going to be a bomb the next time he took a step. Because he just had no clue where it was coming from. Yes, if the offensive line of New England was better, they're not going to hit him 20 times. But they brought so many different kind of packages at New England that they completely got him off guard. Now, do that to a Cam Newton who hasn't been in the league as long. Maybe you can confuse him. Maybe you can trick him into throwing it to a place you don't want. And then the other big stat that I just want to bring up as far as how this game went. New England who is usually amazing in third down, you know, they're just like a machine and just converting third downs left and right. They were 2 of 15 in this game. So, I mean, just one of those weird things where I still feel like New England was probably the better team on Sunday. They just fell behind and could not come back.
Well, part of it, too, was the safeties were just destroying Danny Amendola and Edelman when they would come across. And that's something that, you know, some of the, you know, you don't have Ted Ginn do it that much. And, you know, you'll have Coy Brown run the 9-round or whatever. But that's what, like, Jericho Cotchery and some of the other guys do, is they do these cross routes across so that Cam Newton could just see it, find it, throw it. And if you do that against T.J. Ward or you do that against Darian Stewart, they're going to pop you. And, you know, it's all it takes is that one time sometimes, and those guys may not be thinking the same way the next time they come across the middle. So, you know, and that's the thing, too, with Brady. When you get hit so many times, at some point it hits you psychologically. Like, doesn't matter how good a quarterback you are, you get hit, especially the way, like, Von Miller, where he just ripped Marcus Cannon a couple times to whack Brady. I mean, Lord. Just that messes with you. Like, you don't know where you're throwing the ball because you're scared somebody's going to come and hit you. You know, I mean, Cam Newton doesn't have to worry about that because his offensive line has really been, you know, one of the best ones of the entire league this year. I mean, I think that's going to be a big key, is the two lines going against each other, which one's going to be better. And two defenses that work well with turnovers and all that stuff, especially the Panthers, who that's how they win games, basically feasting on turnovers and then letting kind of Cam do his thing. But, well, I mean, we'll have to see. It's going to be a big battle. This is going to be a big, big test for Ron Rivera, you know, going against another, going against a much more experienced coach than Bruce Arians, let's be honest. You know, Bruce Arians he's been a great coordinator for a lot of his time. You know, not a long time been a coach like Gary Kubiak has. So I think this is going to be really, really big, coaching wise, line wise, everything. This is going to be a really intense matchup to see on so many different ends. I think we're going to have fun the next 2 weeks going through this with the three shows that we have in the next 2 weeks before that game. But I mean, anything else you guys want to say about the game? We really don't have, you know, much going on news wise. So if you want to say something else about the game, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't have a whole lot to add. I just know both these games brought up a lot of good strengths and weaknesses for both teams. I think that we're really going to have a fun time in these next three podcasts to really break it down, maybe get some little tidbits here and there. You know, and also, you know, when Media Day comes out and all that, that'll be kind of fun for us to kind of, you know, talk about maybe some of the what these guys are feeling and how they feel about what's going to be happening. So, you know, these games to me, one was exactly the way I kind of figured it could be, and the other one was just a shock. So, I mean, overall, not a bad weekend. You know, great weekend if you're a Carolina Panthers fan.
Yeah, John Fox to do the coin flip for the Super Bowl just so I can look at his two former teams and go, "Hi, guys. We all made it to the Super Bowl, didn't we?"
Yeah, I mean, you know, look at it. If you're the Patriots, that offensive line coach should have been fired, right? He got fired.
Yeah, he is gone.
Yeah. So,
You know, you get what you get.
I mean, they had a lot of injuries this year.
That's my thing. You know, I understand it is the coach's responsibility, and there's a lot that goes into it, and he's the first one to take the bullet when things don't go right. But on the other hand, you got to point out there's injuries. There's been other things going on. It's just hard for me to say that just him alone deserves it. But, you know, they didn't play exactly all that great this year, even when they had more healthy bodies. So, you know, sometimes you get the axe. That's the way that, you know, business works, let's be honest. So, I have another question, though. I heard today, and I really didn't follow this closely. In fact, I'm very ignorant of this situation. Maybe you guys can shine some light on it. But I was to the understanding that the New England Patriots had some technical difficulties with their computers.
Yes,
which,
with the tablets, yeah.
Yeah, the tablets, and of course that happened to the opposing team last week, the Kansas City Chiefs, and New England Patriots were saying, "Well, that's not a big deal. What's on the field is what matters." It's a big deal now that it happened to them, so I'm just curious. I mean, any shenanigans going on here? I mean, this is the team that is known for cheating and getting away with things. Are they getting a taste of their own medicine in a way?
Well, Gary, you have to understand, these stadiums are only so big. You can only plug in half of the tablets.
Oh, man.
So you stick to the home ones first. And, you know, if the ones that the road team has accidentally have died in the last week, you know, there's not much you can do.
Yeah. I guess you got to bring your own portable generator and make sure you got your own tablets.
I mean, they went and hardwired them or whatever. I mean, I don't think it's a big deal.
Yeah. I just, you know, throw that out there a little bit. It's interesting. We always have to talk about controversy.
When you lose, they're always going to find the scapegoat. It's just the way it is. I mean, you think Gostkowski should blame himself for missing an extra point?
Not me.
He put the game on himself, he said.
It's great that he did. It's a very class move by him saying, "Listen, you can put it all on me," because – listen, I mean, if you really want to break it down that way, butterfly effect, I mean, he makes it. Who knows what happens? It could go exactly the same. It could go completely different. Who knows? But, you know, if he does make it and everything else goes exactly the same, all they have to do is kick the extra point. But, you know, it's just one of those crazy things. I don't know if it was – I can't say it was the moment because he's been in bigger moments. But, I don't know, sometimes you just get in your head. I remember the announcer saying something like, usually he kicks it off the left hash mark here, he put it in the middle, maybe he was just in his head and was overthinking it. But just one of those weird things. I don't think you can really blame him, though.
You know what? We've seen the best kickers in NFL history miss some crazy kicks and even miss some chip shots. And it's the way it works. It's the position they play. We can. It's not the science that you would think it was. It's not complete. It's not perfect. There's no purity to kicking the football. And so, sure. I mean, I get it. You take responsibility for your actions, and I think that's wonderful. In truth, it's just what happens. And not only that, with the new rule, this is what's supposed to happen, right, guys? This is what the NFL wanted. They wanted more missed kicks. They wanted more two-point conversions. Yeah. Hey, there you go.
Gostkowski hadn't missed one since 2006, and that one was blocked. So it may have been longer since he missed one where he actually missed it. That's huge for that point. I mean, Belichick not kicking the field goal a couple of times, said he had a chance to kick field goals.
Yeah, I kind of brought that up a little earlier. I'm totally fine with it. I had a discussion with a coworker today about that exact thing where he was under the opinion that if they kicked the field goal, they would have won the game. I was like, well, if they kicked the field goal, maybe Denver plays a little different. And maybe they do get the first down. I mean, it's tough to say. The way Denver's defense was playing, I totally understand feeling like, okay, we're down here. We're inside the 30. This is our chance to score. We need to take advantage of it. Third down, fourth down, it doesn't matter. We need to score, and we're going to put the ball in Tom Brady's hands and have faith in it. And, you know, a couple times it didn't work out, and then finally at the end it did. They just didn't get the two-point conversion. So I'm not going to second-guess it. I'm not going to sit there and make it seem like I'm anywhere near as smart as Bill Belichick is, especially when it comes to football. So I will go with what he decided.
I mean, again, this is one of those times where Bill Belichick's known for taking chances. He does it all the time. Sometimes they don't work out. A lot of times they do. That fourth and 10 that Tom Brady hits, and he still had the touchdown. Look, it came down to one play. Denver was on it. I mean, Brady got pressured. I mean, he kind of just threw it there. Even on that fourth and 10, he kind of just threw it up there for Gronk, and Gronk made the catch. I mean, you know, so just sometimes things roll that way. But we'll spend the next three shows talking about, I mean, this Super Bowl. We'll look at it from different ways here. These championship games, they were big in the ratings. 53.5, I think, million for the AFC championship game, which is about a 1.0 less than the record, which is Steelers-Jets from 2011.
Hell yeah.
And NFC was about 10 points less, about 45. That was a big blowout. You know, that's why. So, that's a big. Do what? Oh, and the Royal Rumble. Yeah, you know, Navy. You never know.
My plan was to watch both football games and then the Rumble. And about halfway through the fourth quarter, we went, okay, it's Rumble time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you never know. Vince would love to say that he took credit for some of that. But, you know, I mean, and Peyton Manning also made $2 million with that win over the Patriots. That's how they structured his taking less deal, is he gets $2 million if he wins the championship game, which he already did, and he gets $2 million for winning the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. So Peyton Manning has some money on the line in that that game. Maybe that'll motivate a little bit there in 2 weeks.
It's that Papa John's money, you know? He don't have to do a commercial this summer. He could just, you know, win a Super Bowl and get that money.
Sure, exactly. Big ratings for these games. People are still watching them, obviously. So that's a good thing.
Now, if we could just get every single one of them to listen to this podcast.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
That's right.
We can keep dreaming on that one.
Now we just need our own billboard. We need to spend the money, get a billboard at these championship games. That way people check it out.
For sure. So I think the only things we really have, I mean, we'll get into more of the Super Bowl stuff with the Thursday show, but and I guess we got to talk Pro Bowl then, since there isn't a whole lot. I mean, I know nobody cares about it, but maybe some people do. Zach Ertz gets signed to a 5-year, $42 million extension after, you know, he's 25, makes 75 catches, and gets about 850 yards last year. He was one of the big targets for Bradford and Sanchez. He is now the fourth highest paid tight end behind Jimmy Graham, Julius Thomas, and Rob Gronkowski. Obviously, all three of those guys deserving. Ertz deserve that money?
Yeah, I mean, he's a cornerstone of the Eagles offense now. He's one of the few that survived, you know, Chip Kelly getting rid of everybody. But he's well-deserving. He played extremely well, and he's just going to get better.
Yeah, he's a young guy that, you know, he has a great deal of potential. And you got to lock those guys up when you get a chance, and this is their time. And if they can build the offense and really make him a cornerstone like he already is and keep him that way, they've got a great player here. So I don't think this is a bad deal.
I agree, too. I think you got to sign a guy like that. He was tremendous this year for them. He made some big catches and big moments for them when they needed it. I think, you know, he's one of the guys you need to count on, because some of those receivers weren't really that great. I mean, you want to be looking for receivers if you're the Eagles. I think Aguilar is a good guy, but the tight ends were not the problem at all for the Eagles this year. Mike McCarthy has come out and said apparently this has been a problem. I mean, this has been a problem for years now. The way Ted Thompson does it with the Packers, where he doesn't go sign guys in free agency. He's all about the draft and getting a lot of the same talent around and just building it up or whatever. Mike McCarthy says he's sick and tired of the way that he doesn't go out there and sign free agents. Do you think this might motivate the Packers now to finally go out there after the season they had? They did go to the playoffs, and maybe change the way they do things in the offseason a little bit.
I could see that. I kind of hope not, though. The reason I say I hope not is because of the fact that I like the way the Packers have done things in the past, and that's build on the draft. Not only that, build with some of these young sign guys that, you know, are not really well known, and that's the success they've had. It's the way they've been able to keep the guys that are high free agent guys. They've been able to sign them back because they had the money there. They weren't worried. I mean, the Patriots do this all the time. I've thought that the Packers have got a great way of doing it their own. If they go and do this whole, hey, let's go sign all the big-name guys, you're going to lose some of those guys that you have had for a while. You're going to lose some guys that have been a cornerstone just because you're trying to make a big splash. I get it. Yes, everybody wants to make the big splashes, but if you've had success year in and year out, I don't see the big deal. I mean, it all comes down to they had a few problems on defense. You can sign a huge guy, but if they're talking about signing 3-4 big names, that to me can hurt a team.
Yeah, I don't think McCarthy's really looking for that amazing splash, like top free agent. I just think, I mean, how much better would Green Bay have been once Jordy Nelson went down if they had went out and signed like two veteran wide receivers that could have just kind of filled that hole?
They probably could have went and hassled the Dolphins for Mr. Greg Jennings again, who, you know, Rodgers has chemistry with. I mean, he wasn't doing nothing.
I think it's more that, just maybe more role players, maybe more just guys that are going to fit specific needs. I mean, obviously the draft is extremely important in the NFL, and Green Bay understands that, but it is also very key that you use free agency well. I think as a Jets fan, one of the things they did extremely well was they used free agency for their favor the last few years as far as offensive pieces, and they allowed themselves to use the draft to really bring in young talent in the core positions, you know, the offensive and defensive lines, and then used free agency to make the receiving core now with Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker. So I think that's what McCarthy would like, is use the draft for our core, like, most important pieces. And then, you know, let's go out and get a tight end and an extra wide receiver or an extra cornerback and really bolster the team there as well.
Yeah, and that's a smart decision. You know, it just, to me, you know, if you're saying we need to have more impact on the free agent market, to me those are the bigger names. When you're talking about mid-level guys, guys that are getting paid just as much as your guys are already getting paid on your roster, that's not a giant move, and he's just adding veterans. And that's great if you can get the right veterans. We've seen how it works all across the NFL. So it's fine and dandy, and you could add those pieces. To me, they just don't always work out, and you can't blame someone if they don't work out. It's kind of a gamble.
For sure. And speaking of not working out, you know, two guys that it just didn't work out for this season, you know, if we're talking about the Dallas Cowboys, Dez Bryant and Tony Romo. Dez had to go on Instagram and talk about how he knows he didn't play well this season, but obviously the fans who are moaning and groaning do not understand how it is to play with a broken foot. It obviously hurts you mentally, and that he's impatient just as much as everybody else for the 2016 season to start. He even talks about maybe he shouldn't have played. Obviously, hindsight's 20/20, but, you know, do you take a look at that and say maybe he shouldn't have, or do you just, I mean, what do you think, Gary?
You know, you look at this and you go back and you kind of, you know, think about, you know, Randy mentioned the butterfly effect. Great way of looking at this. What if he didn't play? Well, okay, there's a possibility they may have lost another game. Not many. I mean, they only won four of them. They lost a ton of games already. I mean, what's that going to really be in the scheme of things? But at the time when he did come back, there was still that hope because of how bad the NFC East was. There was still that thought. You know, it's so sad, but we were talking about this until week 13 or 14. Yeah, the Cowboys still got a shot. They could do, and that's the thing. And I think Dez Bryant, yeah, he can blame ownership. He can blame the coaches. He can blame the Cowboys doctors that were talking to him that he shouldn't have played. And you know what? He probably shouldn't have, if you want to be, let's be honest, and talk to a specialist who knows all about this kind of injuries. But you've got to think Dez Bryant's a competitive guy. I for sure don't think he was on the sidelines sitting there saying, I don't want to play, but if you guys think I should, I guarantee you who's yelling at them, I'm going to play the next week. No, you're not. I'm going to play next week. No, you're not. That was probably Dez Bryant. That's the way his attitude is. He's a fiery guy. He's very competitive. I get it when, you know, hindsight, you're going to say those things. Well, maybe I shouldn't have done that. You know, maybe I, you know, shouldn't have told my boss that I'm not doing that project. That comes up in our own lives, right? It's just the way things work out. Yeah, you know, it is what it is now.
Yeah, that's just every NFL player where, you know, they get injury, and, you know, they come back and then the offseason hits and they kind of have time to they realize, you know, it's not as healed as they thought it was, and it's kind of hindering them in the off season. They go, well, you know, I probably shouldn't have come back when I did. It was probably silly. And I mean, we're going through that right now with Carolina, with Thomas Davis, who breaks his damn arm and is going, I'm going to be there for the Super Bowl. I mean, he may regret that come March, April, when it's really still bothering him, but you know, it's just one of the things. If football players want to get out there, and they take that risk, and that's the same thing with Dez Bryant.
Yeah, and this injury is a serious injury because we've seen it in careers. It really has, and there's still guys. Hakeem Nicks is a guy you need to look at. His exact same injury was never the same receiver. He still tries to play in the league. Not the same guy once was, you know. So Dez Bryant has to be smart about this. You know, he's had to have more work on that foot. It's going to take an entire offseason.
But I think that, you know, I don't see Dez in the same way, because there was time, I mean, when Romo was there, that Dolphins game where he played really well, and there was other games where I don't think that was his foot that was making it to where the ball was in his hands, he wasn't catching it. He just wasn't.
I do agree with him on the mental thing. I really do. We've seen this in athletes all the time, where they overcompensate in other areas, and maybe mentally he was overcompensating for making sure his footwork was right, forgot about his hands. It happens quite often. I'm not making excuses for the guy. I definitely agree. He's a professional. He needs to make this second nature. But, you know, if, you know, that was taking his focus away, he should have been on the field.
Well, on the other one, you know, Tony Romo had some MRI on his collarbone to test the strength of it, and he's going to go ahead and have a steel plate put in so that he doesn't have to deal with this injury possibly cropping up again. That would make it to where he could, you know, play longer. He feels like he could play for a while. We talked about last week, he feels like he can play four more years. You know, obviously, if you're the Cowboys, unless, you know, even if one of the guy that you're hoping to draft or somebody you bring in develops well, you obviously want Tony Romo, who still showed he can play when he was healthy. You know, you think this is the best move here? Go ahead and get this plated. You get this out of the way. You got steel there, so when you fall, it's not just a bone hitting.
Well, I don't know why what he's trying to do to make it better sooner. I mean, come next season, Johnny Manziel is going to be your starting quarterback anyways, so just do whatever you want to make it comfortable while you're standing at the sidelines. But
see, Randy,
sorry.
that would make me really concerned, but here's the thing. Let's just take your scenario. Let's say that happens. Week one, Johnny Manziel walks in, plays the game afterwards, goes to the bar, gets drunk. Hey, he's suspended for 4 games, so Romo gets to come back for those 4 games. That's okay. That's going to work out. Johnny Manziel will drink himself out of the league.
Well, that's why they're going to also draft Tim Tebow. They're signed to Tim Tebow, and they're going to have them be roommates.
Oh, that's great. So you can pray.
And they're going to make a TV show out of it, and it's going to debut on the CW in August.
You know, sadly, Randy, you know how high ratings that would get for that show? I guarantee you it would be pretty high rated. So, just like Hard Knocks is every time the Cowboys do it. But, you know, it's just something that I look at with this, you know, Romo situation. The doctors have already said to him, look, this will work, but it's not going to completely protect you. This is not going to strengthen your collarbone. So next year when Romo is playing and Luke Kuechly just dives headfirst into his chest and, you know, everybody's going to be aiming for that collarbone, it's got a good opportunity to break again. This is not going to fortify that. That is not going to make him Superman on the collarbone. This is still going to be a concern. This is not a fix-all. So I don't want people to get that wrong. This is not going to strengthen his collarbone enough to make him where he's not going to get a future injury if something happens. So I think, once again, that's why the Cowboys have to look for a quarterback because, you know, if nothing else, just have a solid backup, not a guy that's...
Yeah, I mean, you know, Aaron Rodgers waited 3 years. Tyrod Taylor waited 4 years. I mean, there's nothing wrong with waiting. It's not going to hurt you. Mm-hmm. And if Romo gets hurt again, then, you know, that opportunity comes up. You go and show what you have. And if you're like Romo did, and maybe you unseat Romo and Romo has to go find another team to play for. I mean,
or, you know, PGA, you know.
Yeah, you can go. You know, he always was a good golfer. You can go do that. But, yeah, I think that pretty much ends it for the show today. You know, hopefully you enjoyed what you heard here, us discussing the championship games, whatever. On Thursday, we'll talk about that Pro Bowl and, you know, how they did the teams and stuff and kind of go through our first round of kind of talking about the Super Bowl and some of the matchups and whatever. And then the next week, it'll be all about the Super Bowl and everything, so... just kind of hitting that road. It's almost over, guys. Makes you sad.
Definitely sad. But, you know, we got a big offseason coming up, and a lot of different things are already, you know, coming up. And it's just, you know, it's exciting to kind of get a chance to kind of learn about new players and find out where these guys are going to different teams and things like that, coaches as well. So it's definitely going to be entertaining. But it'll be kind of sad not to have actual on in-game action to talk about.
Well, go ahead and like the W2M Network Facebook page. You can go to facebook.com/W2M Network. You can go subscribe and write and review. Rate and review, I'm sorry, on iTunes and Stitcher. That helps us out a lot there. You know, all it takes is you write a little bit of something. You know, just leave a little rating, whether it's 1 to 5 stars, and you write a little bit of something on what you like and don't like about the show, and that's all you got to do. It's really not that difficult. And then, you know, you could check out the rest of what's on W2 Network. Of course, we already talked about that Rest of the Max special we did, reviewing the Royal Rumble, so you can go check that out there. You know, Randy released his newest backlog busting. Talk about it, Randy.
Yeah, our last backlog busting project, we What do we do? He always asks me this, and it's been too long. I'm too old. I played Thomas Was Alone, and which is a weird indie game about blocks. And Wes played Final Fantasy X2, and we played the wonderful game of Bubble Bobble. Anybody remembers that from the 80s? Wes and I somehow played through that game twice and didn't kill each other, so I'm pretty proud of ourselves there.
That is now a feat.
I am dredging myself through Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time, which has not aged very well. I'll just say that.
I always had issues trying to finish that game. Just not one of the things I wanted to do sometimes. But, everything will be new at the normal times that they are. And, just make sure to keep coming back, and we'll be back on Thursday night, Friday morning. Until then, later, everybody. Peace.
Listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.